What is going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast. Hope everyone's doing well, staying safe, and following the rules. You know, I try not to look too far down the road, more of a day-by-day, even maybe week-by-week guy, and just keeping my head up, following the rules, staying quarantined, and being positive. Because you know the one thing that in my 35 years of life, when we all get on the same page in this country and do what we're supposed to do, we usually get through weird things, bad things. And this is just, this is kind of crazy. I mean, there's no really any way around it, but you got to put on a positive face. I'm glad I'm still able to do this. Hope everyone, you know, small business owners out there and everyone just, I'm here for you. You know, you can always shoot my DMs at John Middlecoff. Is my Instagram handle. I mean, obviously it's for football, but you can shoot me about anything. I'm here. I'm quarantined. I got times on my side. Just me, a mic, a little water, and my computer. You know, there's nothing to watch, so just talk. You know, that's what I do. I talk, and I'm glad I'm able to keep doing that, but I'm thinking about everyone, you know, that listens to this show and your families and my families, and just stay positive. I mean, that's what I'm doing, and I hope everyone else is doing that too. And luckily, despite a bizarre, crazy week, you know, we got NFL stuff, and a lot has happened. We'll dive into Brady. My last podcast on Tuesday, I assumed he was going to stay. He clearly is not staying. A little bizarre, at least of recording this. He still hasn't signed his contract. And then the NFC East. There was a couple major moments this week for the Cowboys and the Eagles, Amari and Darius Slay. We'll dive into both those moves. The Rams, they're absolutely in shambles. Just poorly run when it comes to in terms of financially managing the cap. And then we'll just fire through some stories just because a lot has happened since I last recorded. And then I'll answer some of your Middlecoff mailbag questions. But I'll start with Brady and Belichick. I say it all the time, football is just a television show. And it's the number one television show in America. It's the one television show when it's on, tens of millions of people will watch. Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, big games on Sunday afternoon, big morning national games get 10 plus million people. I mean, the good night games can get up to 20. A CNN show doesn't even get a million people. A 49er game in the Bay Area has over a million people watching it, just in the Bay Area alone. Football moves the needle in 2020, unlike any other show. You know, back in the day, Google some of the shows like MASH and Cheers, back when we only had, three or four channels. They're like big seasons, like the final seasons. We're doing like 40 to 70 million people given on specific show and specific episode, an episode. 60 million people all at once watching one season finale of MASH or season finale of Cheers. But one thing every elite television show has is a great main character. Like Cheers, Ted Danson. If you're watching Curbed, he's still going strong. But I actually stumbled upon that show on Netflix like a year ago, because I remember growing up, it was right at the tail end of when, at the beginning of when I kind of have some memories in my youth. I remember my dad really liked that show. It was one of the biggest shows in American history, and then led into shows of my youth like Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Love that show. Love Will Smith. To shows now, I'm sure you Mad Men, Breaking Bad, you name it, The Wire. Tony, The Sopranos. Sopranos probably one of my favorite shows. Tony Soprano is one of the great main characters in the history of television. Well, Brady and Belichick, while they're two separate people, they really go hand in hand. And their 20-year run was unlike anything we've ever seen. And now they've always, to me, kind of been the main character. It wasn't Belichick. It wasn't Brady. It was Belichick and Brady. Or Brady and Belichick. They were together. They were the main characters. It was those two guys. And they moved the needle. The Dallas Cowboys get the highest television ratings in America, and they consistently have. It's why Fox loves putting them on, because you put them on, a lot of people watch. Well, the one team over the last, I'd say, 6-7 years, I've been following ratings pretty closely, that can match them, or at least stay right there with them in the fast lane, is the Patriots. And it's not because, like, oh, the Patriots, they've been going strong for 50 years. They were really shitty before Belichick got there. Really bad. Had never won a championship. Hadn't really been that relevant. Hadn't won that many games. Had a little stretch with Parcells, but for the most part, weren't a well-run franchise. And Robert Kraft hired Bill Belichick. A year later, they draft Tom Brady, and the rest is history. They went on for 20 years. But it was more than just winning or even losing in some big games. It was factoring in just Belichick's kind of an asshole. Brady's, you know, kicking everyone's ass. And then you factor in a couple scandals, Spygate, Deflategate. When you said the Patriots, whether you're sitting there with your mom, whether you're sitting there with a dude that knows nothing about sports, or whether you're sitting there with your best friend that you watch all the games with, every single person you came across had an opinion, good or bad. And in the entertainment business, you never want to be in the middle. You never want to be in the friend zone. You want to be loved or you want to be hated. Because the older you get, you realize, well, if she hates me, I'm not done. If I'm in the friend zone, it's over. It's like you bring up the Bengals. You think the Bengals, anyone has an opinion? No. You bring up the Pats, people got an opinion. It's kind of like LeBron or Michael Jordan or the Warriors the last several years or the Houston Astros right now. They evoke emotion. Part of it is because they were elite. That's a huge part of it. And they dominated the sport, a league of parity, for 20 years. 6 championships, 9 Super Bowls. They went to 8 straight AFC championships. They beat everybody. They ruined the Houston Texans. They ruined the Colts. They've owned the Pittsburgh Steelers for the last decade. The Chiefs, who had their best team in forever 2 years ago, they held them out of the Super Bowl. They've ruined the 3 teams in their division. They ruined Seattle's chance for a second Super Bowl, and those guys become an absolute legends with multiple rings. They've played a huge part, a massive part in football history. What Belichick and Brady have done, the 20-year run they have, we'll never see that again in football history. It's never happening. It's impossible. It would take probably like a coach of Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, to get his Tom Brady in the near future and them be together for the next 20 years. And that feels unlikely. I mean, hell, Jimmy's already 26 or 27. Hell, he might even be 28. Jared Goff ain't. Neither of those guys are Tom Brady. So it's not an option with either one of those guys. And the reality is that it's over. They're splitting up. And that makes me sad. You know? Now, the good thing is they're not leaving the league, either one of them. Right? Tom's going to be in Tampa, and Belichick's going to stay. And Tom's on a really good team with a proven head coach, a proven defensive coordinator, a bunch of weapons. And if Tom at 43 can somehow circumvent Father Time, which he's done pretty damn well up to this point, but we're getting to the point of like the law of diminishing returns. How long can this go? But if he can just have 1 or 2 okay years, it'll be pretty. If he can just make the playoffs with a team that hasn't made the playoffs in 12 years, it'd be a pretty big moment for his resume. And Belichick, while 68, young soul, could probably coach another 6-7 years. If he can make the playoffs with a Jared Stidham or an Andy Dalton or whoever, I think he'd earn a lot of credit. But the reality is, more than likely, neither will be as good without the other. Because the power in those two was the combo. They went hand in hand. It's the greatest combination, I'd say, in the history of sports. Like Shaq and Kobe had a lot of success separate from each other. They were unstoppable together. And it kind of pains me that these two guys had to break up. And ultimately, my theory on this is, and I know I said on Tuesday I thought Tom was going to say I did. But I think Belichick didn't, and I've read a bunch of things on both sides. My gut is Belichick didn't want him back. Period, point blank, end of story. Just didn't want him. And offered him a number, and I mean it'd be a number me or you or anyone listening would die to get. Maybe like, hey, Tom, we'll give you $20 million. And Tom's like, what about year two? Because they're offering me 2 years, $60 million. Yeah, we're going to go year by year. He just gave a number that he knew he'd say no to. And Brady said, screw you, no, however it went down. I know all the press releases were positive, but I don't think this was a positive breakup. Because even Tom, you know, and maybe sometimes, you know, in life, in relationships, professionally or personally, it's just time to go your separate ways, regardless how great the times were. A lot of people that have gotten divorced over the years that have been deeply, deeply in love, right, and had just incredible moments together. A lot of business partners have broken up that have made millions of dollars together. Bands break up all the time that put out hit records in the history of time. Think of all the bands. How many bands stay together? So it's this. You could argue it's inevitable. It really is. But to me, what makes it sad is that we're just never seeing it again. And I think sometimes when you see it just it end, you know, you tell yourself, yeah, we're never seeing that. No, we're never seeing that again. Like when Michael Jordan retired 20 years ago or whatever, when it was over for the Bulls, like, we're not seeing Michael again. Kobe got close, but he wasn't Michael. He wasn't. When Tiger Woods can't play golf anymore, like, we ain't seeing Tiger. Yeah, Rory's good. You know, Koepka can play. Some of these young cats coming up are going to win some majors. It's just, we're not seeing Brady and Belichick. And Coach Reed and Mahomes are ass kickers. You think they're going to win? They got to win five more championships to match those guys. But think how long it took those two to win the six. They won three in 01, 04, and 05. Or I guess 03 and 04. Whatever. You know, a long time ago. They didn't start winning the others till like last 6 or 7 years. There was a huge gap in between the championships. They lost a couple. It just, it really is remarkable the power that that brand of a franchise that was irrelevant for basically 30 years beside a couple years with Parcells to come storming back and become a staple brand in the most popular sport in America. And it's not over because, like I said, Belichick's team, I'm gonna pick the Patriots to make the playoffs. I'm going to pick the Bucks to make the playoffs. Knock on wood, the football season happens. But it's not going to be the same. He's going to look weird in the red. Belichick will look normal and miserable, but Jared Stidham running out there to run an RPO for Josh McDaniels and throw a quick out route to Julian Edelman, it's going to make me sad, man. I just, sometimes you need a villain, and I don't mean a villain like Tom Brady. He's probably a great guy. Belichick, most people that know him really like him. You know, it's not like they were a villain because they'd been arrested or they just basically been kicking everyone's ass. Kind of like everyone hated the Warriors. For 5 years, they kicked the crap out of everyone. They didn't win the championship every year. But the NBA, you could feel it this year. Ratings in the tank. People missed them. Your sport needs someone for everyone to have an opinion on. The Astros, it doesn't feel like Major League Baseball season is going to happen. You know what's going to be cool this year about the Major League Baseball season? Even if you weren't a big baseball fan, you were going to have a take on the Astros when they were getting in brawls, when people were throwing at them, whether they're winning, whether they're not hitting. Who's that team this year in 2020? You know, that really evokes emotion. That, like, everyone's like, damn. It was always Brady and Belichick, and it's just, there's going to be a void when this football season starts. Despite them both still being around, it's going to be, it might never be filled again. Let's dive into the NFC East. And we had two major, major moves this week. Obviously, Dak got franchised, but I think that was inevitable when he didn't get extended. It was Amari Cooper was signed to a massive deal, and the Philadelphia Eagles traded for Darius Slay. And I think you saw two organizations that operate completely differently. Jerry Jones is one of the great businessmen in the history of America. He's been a big part. Like I say, Brady and Manning were like the Bird and Magic. Him and Kraft and Goodell have kind of been the David Stern of the NFL. Blowing it up, marketing it, making it a really big deal. They have played a role in that over the last 20 years. In terms of labor, in terms of the CBA, I mean, they play a role in that. But just, he's part, when I talk about the television show, he's a big part, he's a big character in the television show. One thing he doesn't do a good job of, though, when he traded a first-round pick for Amari Cooper, he should have been proactive in signing him to a deal right then. Because he would have paid 30% of what he just got him for. Howie Roseman is the complete opposite. He is all, and the Eagles hang their hat on this, they're always progressive with their contracts. In terms of, they're always out in front of guys early so they don't get into a pinch late. Because if you wait late, you pay a premium. If you let the guy get close to free agency, you pay top market value. Now, it's all, I mean, you're still paying guys, but you don't pay Zach Ertz $30 million guaranteed if you extend him a year before his contract's up. You pay him $21 million guaranteed. Fletcher Cox was an elite, elite player, and he was, when he was in his peak, was kind of close to Donald. He got 63 guaranteed. Donald ended up getting 87. Because you always think about signing guys before you get to the moment where the rubber has to meet the road. Now, the Cowboys are lucky. They're a huge brand. They're a great team to play for if you like being famous. And they have no state income tax. So Amari Cooper clearly didn't want to leave. But here's the thing with Amari Cooper. And I like Amari. I watched him when he got drafted here for the Raiders. I was confident he was going to be a Hall of Famer by about year two when he was going to Pro Bowls. He leaves a little something to be desired. I'm not saying he's not a really good player. I think in a perfect world, he's like an elite number two. If he's your number one, you better have a really good number two. Like when I look at a number one, I think Julio Jones. I think Michael Thomas. Hell, Tyreek Hill can be a number one. I think what Odell Beckham should be able to do if his quarterback can function. Devontae Adams. I know those guys can carry my offense. Amari can have stretches. You know, when he got traded to the Cowboys, he had like a 5-game stretch where he was awesome. Last year, he has moments, and I know he was injured. But Michael Thomas last year got paid a lot of money, a ton of cash. Do you know what he did? 149 catches, 1,700 yards, 9 touchdowns. You know what, Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, whoever, Gail Benson, I'm worth every freaking penny you paid me. Jump on my back, and I'll carry our ass to the division championship. Amari Cooper, again, really good season. Career highs, 79 catches, basically 1,200 yards, 9 touchdowns. He was really good. Amari has the talent to dominate. Amari has the talent to be a 100 catch, you know, 1,300 yard, 12 touchdown guy, and just eviscerate defensive backs. But he kind of picks his spots, and if you get into him, you know, he doesn't love being physical. But when he's on and he's feeling it, he destroys shitty defensive backs. Decent defensive backs, if he's feeling it, he'll destroy that guy too. But really good defensive backs, especially the physical ones, they can throw him out of his game. So a guy that's pretty flawed, I don't love paying top market value. But I think there is an enormous amount of pressure now on Amari Cooper. Time to be a legit one, because you just got paid for like one. Here's the problem, though. When you pay a guy, he doesn't change. Amari's giving you 5 years. We know exactly who he is. Very talented, can be very productive. When he gets banged up, can't really play at 80%. He's got to be 100% to be productive. So you got to keep him healthy, which it's football, you get hurt. Makes me a little nervous. And I think Jerry should have handled this about a year ago, you know, when they traded for the guy. This guy should have been extended last year coming into the year. I don't understand why Jerry always waits. Like he thinks he's going to find something out that he doesn't know over that period of time, because he always likes the guy, and then he keeps the guy, and he pays top market value. He gets himself, kind of screws himself. Howie is the opposite. They clearly needed a wide receiver mid-season, or excuse me, a corner mid-season. And Howie was deep in on Jalen Ramsey. Well, they got to a point in time where Howie goes, I got to pay 2 ones and a two, and then eventually give this guy the Amari Cooper contract of corners, which is going to be $70, $80 million guaranteed. That's a lot. And you know what? That's too much. This year, once free agency starts, really wants Byron Jones. It gets to a point where he's becoming the highest corner in the history of the league, highest paid corner in the history of the league in a 2-year span. You know what Howie goes? Yeah, I can't do that. So what does he do? He ends up, because he's patient, and anyone that's playing the stocks right now, you realize, take a deep breath, let everything play out for the next 2 or 3 months, and then take inventory. Right, going right now, there's so much unknown, and you can overpay for stuff and get screwed. Take a deep breath, relax, have a price point where if it doesn't hit, don't buy it. I got a couple stocks right now, until they get bottom out to a number, I'm not touching. I refuse to touch. Snapchat might be one. But I'm not touching unless it gets to a certain number. So what did Howie do? He's very smart about this because he's so good with numbers and value. It's what's crazy about Jerry Jones, one of the great businessmen in the history of sports, and he always overpays for shit when he doesn't have to. You know, he could have just been ahead of it a year ago or 2 years ago. Same with Dak. Imagine if he would have given Dak money before Carson Wentz got paid, and Dak would have gotten 95 guaranteed. Dak would have been happy as a pig in mud and got $95 million, and now he'd be under contract. You wouldn't have to worry about this. Maybe you could have got Amari for like $50 million, save 10, you know, guaranteed dollars, and these guys would be, quote-unquote, way under the market value now. Howie Roseman needs Darius Slay. A guy's always become available. Ends up getting him for a third and a fifth. A guy that's been to countless Pro Bowls and then signs him to a contract extension for way less than Byron Jones. Check the two resumes. He's been a way better player than Byron Jones since coming into the league. And he fits their scheme. Big press corner. So when you see the Eagles and you see the Cowboys, both of them are going to be probably the two teams out of the NFC East because the Redskins got a long way to go and the Giants are terrible. You're going to go, yeah, the Eagles and the Cowboys. It's going to be a little harder for the Cowboys because they got a new coach and it doesn't look like OTAs are going to happen. So Mike McCarthy is going to have a smaller period of time to implement his offense and his defense. Luckily, though, they got a lot of guys returning that they do have a lot of talent. I think they're two playoff teams. But one team consistently is pretty smart about their moves. Jerry can get a little over-aggressive. And I am pro being aggressive. Howie Roseman's aggressive. He will trade a pick for a player. He has no problem doing it. But he also draws a line in the sand. He goes, you know what? That doesn't pencil. And I think too often for Jerry, he's like, screw it. Let's just do it. And then they get in trouble cap-wise. It happens to him every 4 or 5 years. Where the Eagles, for the most part, because they're always thinking big picture and always thinking in the terms of get this guy for a little cheaper if we extend him early, even though it's going to look like a lot of money at the time, 2 years from then, we're going to have flexibility. If that player is injured, not playing as well, we can get off the contract. And the Eagles are always doing that, and that's why they're always able to pivot. They've been in the playoffs 3 straight years. They reloaded this offseason. They got the sweet defensive tackle from the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got Darius Slay. They're going to nail some draft picks, I'm sure, or try to. And they're going to be in a position where they're going to view themselves as the team that's going to win the division. Where the Cowboys, it's going to feel like it's going to be division champs or bust, just given how much they're paying everybody. Zeke's on a historic contract. Dak's going to get stupid money eventually. Amari's just making stupid money. DeMarcus Lawrence is making huge cash. They have to win now. They don't have a choice. Where the Eagles still kind of have a big picture plan always. Jerry just kind of, and I get it. I mean, Jerry's old. He's not just on the back nine. He's probably, hitting his second shot on hole 17. But man, I think sometimes if you can just take a deep breath, and it's hard. I'm sure a lot of people listening, I am impatient. It's something I've really, really worked on as I've gotten older. Because once money and you get involved in business, you realize you can't always be impatient. It's how you do dumb things. Take a deep breath. Take a step back. And that's one thing the Cowboys have a really, really hard time doing. And then they get in these positions where it's like, God, how do they have the most overpaid team in the league? Because they wait till the contract's up to extend the guy. Because these guys like staying in Dallas. Who wouldn't? You're a Dallas Cowboy. The America's team. The team that gets 25 million people a game to watch. Fox and NBC and CBS would, if they could, every Fox game they'd put on primetime. But man, the way they operate with their money is just, you're watching two teams in the division that are both going to view themselves, as Super Bowl contenders this upcoming season. Again, as long as the season goes down, and they're doing it a little bit differently. Okay, let's rattle off some stories. And just basically everything that, some big stories that have happened over the last, 3 days. One big story that happened Thursday was the Rams released Todd Gurley. And I'm not going to give them a reprieve on this one because I think they're terrible with their money. They traded a first-round pick for Brandon Cooks, and they signed him in OTAs because he looks sweet. Well, yeah, guys that run 4.25 in shorts and a t-shirt look incredible, and it's awful. As someone told me today, they might have been able to give him away for a seventh-round pick when you factor in the money. So Todd Gurley and a Mike Silver, and I think I talked about this on Tuesday, said that there were trade talks happening with Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks. And I've been tweeting this all week, and I think I said this on the last podcast. Yeah, the trade talks were happening between Sean McVay and Les Snead. No team would touch him. I had a team in the league tell me today that if Todd Gurley was going to get traded, the Rams were going to have to include a second-round pick. That's how toxic the contract is. And you know what's crazy? He accounted for 14 touchdowns last year. It's the arthritic knee. It's the massive contract. The extension has not even started. You know, most companies, especially startups, you know, the last 10 years, do not start by generating their own money. They're funded by venture capitalists. Like The Athletic right now. I write an article for them usually once a week. It's kind of slowed down now. But Athletic made it because people funded them. Then they create this great business model. Then it becomes something. And then those venture capitalist companies own a piece of it. But most companies, Snapchat, Twitter, whatever, Facebook, all these companies that have started, Square, you name it, over the last handful of years, you see them all untuck it. You go through a million companies. Every company you hear on a podcast is being backed to start by big money. That's how you get off the ground. That's how you create products. That's how you pay for all these employees. You need some funding to kind of start big, to market. Well, being a general manager, you're not spending your own money. You're just using a budget to, and it's a large budget because right now, this year, the salary cap is $198 million. So every owner is giving their GM $198 million to put together a squad. This ain't a mom and pop shop. You got $198 million. Well, a lot of people that are GMs, and I say it all the time, I use the term meathead, are just not quite intelligent enough to handle that type of money. Can you imagine going from like a scout to a college director to all of a sudden being a GM and you have a budget of $198 million? In 2 years, it'll be $220 million. Imagine that. Like, think how important it is to have the money guy that you trust or be a money guy and understand it. It's what makes Belichick so great, right? He can do it all. Well, Les Snead, and I don't totally blame him, it's just scout. He doesn't understand money. He's just paying everybody, trading all these picks for players. Well, he's got a problem on his hands now. He just cut a player that I'm pretty sure the dead cap with Todd Gurley, they cut him because they didn't want to pay him $10 million because he's not worth it, but now he's got $16 million of dead cap. They got Brandon Cooks, who they don't really want. They got Jared Goff, who actually is a solid player. The problem is, though, when you're paying Jared Goff $110 million, you can't pay offensive linemen, and Jared Goff's not a good enough athlete to run around. And Aaron Donald, worth every penny, elite player. Jalen Ramsey will be worth every penny when they pay him. The problem is they haven't paid him yet, and to acquire him, it took two first-rounders and a second-rounder. So the way they've got here is like Todd Gurley at least was drafted in the top 10, and they hit. And then when Sean McVay got there, he was awesome. The problem was, if you look back, when they did pay him, well, the reason you drafted him at 10, the reason he was there is because he had a torn ACL. So you acquired him when he was hurt. Now, in fairness, the ACL usually doesn't come back to bite you once you prove you're healthy, especially at a young age. And this one did. But the Brandon Cooks trade, the Brandon Cooks contract, to me, is the more indefensible one than Gurley. I think the Gurley mistake is understandable. He was an elite talent. They drafted him. McVay got there. He was really good. It just backfired. Because that first year when Sean McVay there, and I think that was the year they lost in the first round of the Atlanta Falcons, Todd Gurley was incredible. The first like 80% of the second year was awesome. And then the knee arthritis thing happened, and then the rest is history. But I say this all the time. I never, when coaches talk, you know, unless I know them and I'm texting with them, if they're just talking to the press, I pay no attention to what they say. It doesn't mean anything to me. Sean McVay's been telling me how great Todd Gurley's been for the last year, how good of a player he is, how much he means to them. It's like, Sean, he barely gets on the field for you. You rotate him in and out. You just cut him. You just cut a guy that you're going to take a dead cap for $16 million. So you tell me how good he is. I don't give a shit. You can tell me he was Earl Campbell. He was Walter Payton. You just admitted you don't think he's any good anymore. You just told us. So I say this all the time. Judge teams off their actions and not their words. So if they're hyping up a player and he's not playing, they're telling you what they think of him. And the Rams just told you what they think of Todd Gurley. He's not worth any money anymore. Not at that level. Now, if they had him for $3 or $4 million, would they have kept him? Probably. Unless something's going on in the locker room or something I don't know about. But for sure, at this point in time with the injury, he's not even close to worth it. And on the open market, it was going to take more than likely a second round pick to have a team trade for him. So that means a team gives you like a sixth or seventh, you give them a second, and they'll take Todd Gurley. That's what it had become. That's pretty nuts. It shows you in the NFL, this is a big reason why guaranteed dollars, you can't guarantee the contracts because guys do get hurt. And if teams were constantly stuck like this, all these teams would be in a pinch. And right now the Rams are in a major pinch because Todd Gurley is still counting for a huge percentage of their cap. And Jared Goff is just starting to make huge money. Same with Aaron Donald. Jalen Ramsey hasn't even been paid yet. They don't have a first-round pick. What? Think about that. For the next 2 years. So they put all their chips in the middle of the table, and it's just, they're in trouble. And it's really, really going to test Sean McVay and how good of a coach he is. The Carolina Panthers, they pretended for like a month how much they love Cam. Cam was like, I can't wait to go back. Well, it's like something was weird. And then they started tweeting about how he's the quarterback number one. They've given him the ability to seek a trade. As of recording this, he's still on their team. Like, guys, they were, thanks for the memories. Like, hey, Dave Tepper, can you tell your Twitter media guy, stop sending out tweets until you release him or trade him? Like, we need some finality with this. You either got to move him like the Patriots. Tom Brady left, then they tweeted all their tweets. You don't tweet quarterback number one, thanks for everything, while he's still on your squad as you sign Teddy Bridgewater. So there's a great unknown with Cam Newton. How healthy is he? Obviously, the problem with the coronavirus, you can't have a physical, you can't work him out. You really have no clue. So I actually think the corona really works against Cam, right? Because his health, if Cam was completely healthy, he'd find a team immediately. He would have been on the Bears, maybe. The Chargers would have signed him without even blinking. Hell, the Panthers might have kept him. But maybe the Panthers think his foot's all messed up. Now, if they did, I would imagine they would have already cut him. So, you know, it's inevitable he's not going to be on the team, but this is kind of a bizarre situation. Foles to the Bears. Look what the Bears have had to do to kind of overcome the Trubisky mistake. Mitch, they traded up from 3 to 2, I think a second and a third round pick to get Mitch. They just traded a fourth round pick and took on money to get Nick Foles, who it makes it a little easier to acquire Nick Foles, let's say, than Cam Newton if you're the Bears. Because if you acquire Cam Newton, Cam Newton's got to be your starter. Like, you can't be like, oh, we're going to have an open competition between Cam Newton and Mitch Trubisky. It's like, come on, guys. Who are we kidding? Nick Foles, still probably better than Mitch Trubisky. Yeah, he is better than Mitch Trubisky, but he's been a backup before. I think it's easy to sell, like, open competition, Foles, Mitch, and just let it play out. But I guess we'll know in the next week or two whether they pick up the fifth-year option. I don't see under any circumstance how they can pick up the fifth-year option. Solid move. Nagy's worked with him in Philly and in Kansas City. DeFilippo worked with him in Philadelphia when they won. When they won the Super Bowl, he was the quarterback coach. Bill Lazor worked with him with Chip Kelly when he was in Philadelphia. So they have a lot of experience. And I think experience with players you're acquiring has never meant more because of the coronavirus. There's going to be no OTA practices. There's going to be no implementing the offense for new players. Now, you can do some virtual stuff, but it's not the same. That doesn't happen in football. Football players are used to sitting in meeting rooms and going to the practice field to learn their craft. And that's not on the table right now. Robert Quinn to the Bears. I was told by someone on the Bears staff, like, that's been one of their targets, so they feel that guy fits perfectly. Add him with Khalil Mack, with Akeem Hicks, I keep Danny Trevathan. Roquan Smith comes back from injury. Their defense should be really good. The Bears' defense should be really good. If they just get solid quarterback play, I think they'd be a solid team. Sean Payton has the corona. That was a pretty big story that came out on Thursday. You know, when I first saw it, I was like, you know, it'd be one thing if I had the corona, right? I'm 35 years old. I'm in good health. I just quarantine. I'd be fine. He is 56 years old. You know, I know he's not 70, but he's not a spring chicken. So I thought that was pretty serious. You know, you see all these things about the NBA players have it. Well, the NBA players are like the best athletes in the world. Whatever peak shape is, they're above that. Sean Payton is just a 56-year-old, kind of chubby football coach. And that's scary just reading that. Melvin Gordon somehow still doesn't have a team. What a bizarre career. You know, draft in the first round, looks like a bust. They draft J.J. Watt's brother. He kind of resurrects his career. Then he becomes a really good player. Then his head and ego get kind of big, and he wants a huge contract. He holds out, even though they're giving him like $10 million a year or offering him $10 million a year. He refuses to take it. Then comes back, It's just kind of, it was solid. Eckler ends up getting paid. He can't find a job. No one wants to pay him because I think he probably wants like $35 million in guaranteed money. No one's going to pay him that. What else? Where will Jameis Winston go? Like, where is Jameis Winston going? Seriously, where is Jameis Winston going? Like, at least Cam, if Cam can pass the physical, someone will sign him. 1,000,000%. I read a story today. Let me rephrase that. I saw a headline today from like NBC Washington that the Redskins are contemplating signing Jameis to have him come be the backup for Dwayne Haskins. Under no circumstances in any world, especially the world we're living in right now, could Dwayne Haskins beat out Jameis Winston. Listen, Jameis Winston is flawed. He's reckless, but he is way better than Dwayne Haskins is March 19th, 2020. I'll promise you that. I don't see how there's, if those two guys split reps, Jameis will beat him out. It's just, I don't even think it would be a question. Jameis actually, what makes him a unique, in a unique situation is that he is a very reckless player and no one can dispute the turnovers because they're terrible, but he is really talented and he's really smart. Academic qualifier at Stanford, like learning football is not a problem. It's just decision-making, which is a problem. I'm not saying he's a perfect player, but he's still good. I mean, good in the sense like can be good if he can cut the turnovers in half. Mike Mayock is a good general manager. You know, when Mike Mayock got the job, remember how many people like around football were like, oh, another media guy just getting an easy gig, didn't have to put in the dues. Like, I hate that, putting the dues, or he didn't deserve that. Now, we'd all been watching Mike Mayock for 20 years on TV. He knew his shit. He was really, really impressive. He was really good. Of any analyst in any sport on television, his job was, you know, was kind of niche because he was specifically talking about the draft. Now, granted, the draft's kind of a 365 topic, but he was elite. And he's a really good general manager. And he knows exactly what he's looking for. Tough guys, guys that have been a part of winning cultures, even backup players that are maybe ascending or just former starters that can come in and compete. He has been, if John Gruden didn't hire Mike Mayock, the Raiders might have had no chance. But I actually think Mayock and just the way he looks at football and kind of goes for guys with maybe lower ceilings but higher floors, if they can just hit on a couple blue chippers in the draft, the Raiders finally feel like they got a little identity and are headed in the right direction. If Mike Mayock, for whatever reason, this is not going to happen, was like fired by the Raiders tomorrow, I think he'd be the number one general manager candidate in the NFL of like guys that would be available. Like I think he's really, really good. Really, really impressive. The Raiders are pretty lucky to have him. Okay, let's answer some Middlecoff mailbag questions. May only do a couple because I need to save them for the upcoming weeks. If you are a Chiefs fan, how do you like this free agency? I feel like we have to get rid of, keep big weapons, and pay for it, the Mahomes contract. What are your thoughts? If you are the Chiefs, how would you deal with the cap space? Well, they haven't cut Sammy Watkins, so they're still, I guess, you know, going as planned. I think they'd like for him to take a little bit of a discount. Chris Jones on the franchise tag, clearly they would like to get him with a long-term extension. I think the game plan is pretty clear. You can bring back a lot of those guys and, you know, have a chance to win another Super Bowl. They have a Super Bowl team. They have a really good offensive line. They can add a running back in the draft to go with Kelce, to go with Hill, to go with Sammy, to go with Hardman. Their defensive line, you got Frank Clark. You still got Chris Jones. They need to draft a linebacker. They got corners and safeties, so they need some linebackers, and they need a running back. Other than that, the Chiefs are in pretty good shape. Oh, and to add all the... okay, the Rams. This is a long one. Been listening to the pod for a while and really like a lot of the things happening around the league. I'm a huge Ram fan, originally from Southern California, but now live in Seattle. I was wondering if you had any insight to what the Rams organization seems to be doing. Not going to lie, last season was rough. Problems of Goff being a mediocre system pocket quarterback and exposed and exploited. The future doesn't look much better either. Seemingly overnight, they've made a lot of questionable moves, re-signed Whitworth and Blythe, let Littleton and Brockers walk, and rumors are they're shopping Gurley and Cooks. I'm not sure they'll double down on their mistake of giving Goff an insane amount of money being a subpar quarterback, or maybe they have something else in the works, but with not a lot of cap space and good draft picks this year, I'm not having a hard time being optimistic. Yeah, I think they're in trouble. And then he tweeted, oh, and they just got Gurley. I think here's the problem. They're in a financial pinch. They had to let Brockers and Littleton walk, and clearly those are two of their better players. Not, you know, Donald or Ramsey level, but really good. Now, they still have Goff. They need to protect him better. They need to coach up the offensive line because they got multiple wide receiving threats at tight end, right? They have Everett, and they have Higbee. Then Cooks is probably not going anywhere. So you got Cooks, and you got Cooper Kupp, and you still got Robert Woods. Now, you drafted a running back last year. He's got to start playing better. So you have some offensive weaponry. Now, the defense, like you said, Littleton's gone. Brockers is gone. Weddle retired. They got some issues. I don't have any draft picks. Going to be tough. Hi, John. Love the pod. It's the only one I listen to consistently. Appreciate that. My question for you is, what will Russell Wilson have to do to get an MVP? I feel like the entire Seahawks organization hinges on him, and without him, the Seahawks would be a 500 team at best. Yeah, they'd be below 500. It boggles my mind that he has somehow never received a vote. I didn't know that. That's insane if that's true. I legitimately cannot think of a team that relies on their quarterback more than Seattle. He hides a lot of massive glaring holes with the team. Also, what do you think of the over-under time-wise is on him winning another Super Bowl? Well, Clowney's still unsigned. That's something I didn't mention in the when I was going over some of the stories. I mean, hey, Jadeveon, if you played hard like you can do, you would get $80, $90 million. Because when you try, you're unblockable. But you don't try all the time. When you don't try all the time, how can anyone feel comfortable giving you a lot of money? Because if you tried all the time, Seattle wouldn't pay you. And then they have you. They got DK Metcalf. They got Russell Wilson. They got some young core pieces. They got the Diggs, the guy they traded for the Lions, was a baller. They got Bobby Wagner. I think with another good draft, the Seattle Seahawks could be in position to make a run this year. Russell Wilson's at the peak of his powers. Now, they got to keep Clowney to me. Now, I wouldn't overpay Clowney, but if I can get him for like $15, $16 million, I would think about doing it because I think they're really good. I mean, their offense, they're going to have they signed Greg Olsen. What's his name? Disley, that tore his Achilles. He'll be back. You got Hollister, who's actually not bad. Lockett's a stud. DK Metcalf's pretty damn good. Carson will be healthy. Penny tore his ACL, but whatever. You can get a running back. And guys come back from ACL. So you got offensive pieces. If the defense is just a little bit better and maybe add one more weapon, I think he could win an MVP in the next year or two. I'm a Colts fan, so happy for the Buckner trade. And Rivers, too. I guess I didn't start the... Just say thank you for the podcasting. I'm a fan from Portugal, stuck in London due to the pandemic. Feel you, man. That sucks. Just today, I was going for a walk around the block, listening to you trying to think about something else. I really like listening to you. I guess this is a positive. I appreciate the positive note here. I'm a Colts fan, so happy for the Buckner trade. And Rivers, too. I guess you'll mention it on the next pod. Yeah, I think this is a little bit old. Okay, last one here. In a two-year regular season period, does Breeze or Brady win more games? Who wins more potential playoff games? Love the podcast. You and Haberman are the only straightforward and relatable sports guys. I appreciate that. We just started a YouTube page. Promo code HAM. Check it out. We'll do sports takes there. If I had to bet, the safe bet would be Breeze. His team's already intact. They have a really good defense. They have a set offense. Like Brady and Arians needs to create an offense. Brady is ran a specific offense in New England, especially these last 3 or 4 years, right? It's a little quote-unquote dinky and dunky, right? They throw to the running back a lot. They throw to the slot receiver a lot. Bruce Arians has been notorious for throwing bombs. It's like NFL blitz. He's throwing go routes. And they're going to have to meet in the middle. He even told, I think Mike Silver was tweeting about when he talked to Bruce Arians what they need to do. They got to meet in the middle. They got to figure it out. Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. Bruce Arians is one of the better offensive minds in recent memory. I think they can. Now, the coronavirus, no OTAs. They're not going to have practice. That's not ideal. So they're going to have to figure that out between those two. And I think they're going to be good, but I do think there's some unknown, and there's just a natural transition period in football of learning an offense, of knowing what to do, of your receivers knowing what he wants you to do. It's going to be a period of time of figuring things out. There is none of that with the Saints. Everyone knows the offense. It's Drew Brees and Sean Payton's offense. It's their baby. Michael Thomas knows it. Jared Cook knows it. Alvin Kamara knows it. Taysom Hill knows it. They all know it. So, and the defense is set. It's just all set. So you would lean the Saints. But I think it's probably by year two, maybe it could swing. But if I was a betting man, I'd still pick the Saints to win the division and the Bucks to be a wild card team. Appreciate everyone listening. Again, stay safe, be smart, quarantine, stay inside. Don't touch others. Wash your hands. Give good distance to older people. I was around my mom earlier this week. I kept telling her, stay away. Don't get close to me. Then she made me lunch, and I said, put it on the dining room table, and I'll come around. I feel like I'm the parent now. But yeah, I'm being serious though, even though it's kind of funny, but it's not funny at all. So stay safe, be positive, come together, help people out. If you got a little money, be nice to people, be compassionate. You know, hell, you support your local, you know, restaurant. Take home food, go pick up food. This is a time when we all can kind of rally around each other, try to be better people. I know, I definitely can. Again, I appreciate all you guys. And we'll have fun the next couple weeks talking about Middle Cuff mailbags, maybe. I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go. Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.